is the End User, episode 138 for Thursday, June 27th, Xbox Phone Home. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr. Chris, it's good to be back. Welcome back.
It's good to be back in the saddle. We missed a little bit of time there, a week and a half. So I figured at the top of the show we'd at least acknowledge the fact that we did indeed miss some time here. I had to attend to some family issues, so we missed last week. And then on Monday, unashamedly, I went to a Rolling Stones concert, so that was a lot of fun. So here we are. It's Wednesday night. We're back in the saddle. I'm excited to get into it.
Yes. So if you are listening on the podcast form, time shifted. Then we apologize for the late release, but it's because we recorded late, because Chris saw the Rolling Stones. How were the Rolling Stones?
They were fantastic. I cannot believe those old men can put on such a damn good show. It was really, really entertaining.
Very cool. Well, shall we get the show started?
Yeah,
we've got
a lot to talk about.
We've got 2.5 weeks of news to cover.
Yeah, so the first thing, before we get into any news at all, I wanted to acknowledge that we had some feedback on the last episode via a comment. I'm not quite sure how to say his username. It's E-A-L-V-N-V, so I'm not sure if this is pronounceable or not. But he says, checking facts is a good idea before making fun of others. Check out Deathworms in BlackBerry World. You can find it at, and he provides a link. So we kind of offhand mentioned that. Well, we were mentioning that it was available now for Windows Phone, and I was very excited about that because it's a fantastic game. It's one of those kind of games like Angry Birds that kind of makes the platform.
And right, and I was not really familiar with it for iOS, and so we were joking about the fact that it was out for iOS and Android and Windows Phone, and it is apparently also available for BlackBerry 10.
That's right. So that's pretty cool, I think. So the joke's on me. It's late to Windows Phone.
The joke is on you, but at least you have it now. And yeah. Have you been playing it?
I have to free up some space to install it. I think I have to uninstall a game. I got to do a swap to get it on my phone. So I haven't been playing it too much.
I see.
But anyway, so check it out. I can't believe they're on all these platforms. That's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very industrious of the developers.
Yeah, so good news all around on that one.
Right.
There was a big event that happened just today, just mere hours ago from when we were recording this on Wednesday night.
The Supreme Court announced a bunch of decisions?
Oh, well, there were many political goings on as well. That would be a little off topic for us, but I'm sure some political podcasts are going to be long in the tooth this week, too.
Did Edward Snowden get on another plane?
It's like the same Snowden channel next time. Or I forget how the Batman thing goes. but no, I'm talking about since we try to stay out of the political side of things and technology, we've got some solid information about Windows 8.1 during the build conference today.
Information? What kind of information?
Well, so there's currently available a preview, and you can install it, but beware. Once the actual 8.1 comes out, you'll have to reinstall all your apps if you've upgraded to this preview version. So tread with caution. Perhaps use a virtual machine or something to test it out. But they've given us the preview right now, and the actual bits are going to be released later this year.
All right, sounds good. So is there anything new that we didn't talk about when we heard about what was going to come out for Windows 8.1 back when we called it Blue?
Yeah, there's a few things. I still kind of like the Blue moniker, don't you?
Well, not for an 8.1, if it was like 8.5 or something. Remember when they released Windows Phone 7.5 and they called it Mango?
Yeah, Mango. That was a cool name.
They should stick with the fruit naming system.
Yeah, well, they've got a bunch of Blue because they're calling the next version of everything Blue. Like there's a Windows Phone Blue, there's a Office Blue, there's Windows Server Blue. They've got all kinds of stuff under that moniker. Anyway, that's all rumor and conjecture, but what we do have are some solid details on what is going to be in 8.1. So we had talked previously about a few of these things, and I'll kind of run down some of the highlights. And again, we talked about a few of these things, so you can go back and listen to the old episode if we're short on one of these things. But we actually get to see it, you know, in action at this point in time, so that's kind of cool. So it's going to have better multi-monitor support, and this is going to be very welcome. So instead of using desktop on multi-monitor, which is what it was like previously, you would have the modern experience or the Metro experience on one monitor, and you would have the plain desktop on the other monitor. And it's like they just didn't get around to implementing the modern experience on both of them. So they've done that now. You can have you can snap apps to either side of the screen on either monitor, so you get a lot more flexibility out of the modern environment.
Cool. It's kind of like what Apple announced for multi-monitor support with OS 10.9 Mavericks, except it took Microsoft a lot less time to come out with multi-monitor support.
That's right. I mean, you think about this for a second, and 8.1 is actually pretty significant. I mean, if I remember correctly, the Windows 7 was a .1 release as well, compared to Vista.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you say that Windows 7 is just a .1 version of Vista, then it's a significant .1 release. But most people don't see it that way. Windows 7 was just the next thing after Vista. These aren't
right.
Comparable.
No, I just mean purely with the version number. And this one is actually being marketed as .1, so that's a little bit different.
Right, because you don't have to pay for this upgrade.
Right, right. So they've also added a boot to desktop feature, which is very welcome for some people. I happen to not mind being dropped into the modern experience upon boot, but for people that wanted the boot to desktop, they've got that. They are indeed adding a start button. You remember we were speculating a little bit about this. So there's an option also to have the start button go to the all apps view instead of opening the live tile part of the modern experience.
Aha.
So maybe that'll ease some people with the start menu. I'm not sure that that is what people who wanted the start button back actually want, but maybe it's some kind of small concession that will make them a little bit more comfortable.
Right. Well, with Windows anyway, more options is always a better thing.
Right. So, yeah, at least you get the choice. You know, I'm probably not going to flip this on, but at least you get the choice, because I know a lot of people were really, really upset about it, and so there it is. So you can also finally change the background of the modern experience, which is kind of baffling.
You couldn't do that before?
No, you could not.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
Okay, well, it's important now. I mean, I guess the first iPhone, you couldn't change the background, but they changed
quickly. You could change it between a bunch of their defaults, but you couldn't make it your own picture.
Aha. Well, that's good that they are fixing that. They should really roll that out to all builds right away.
Yeah. So it'll be coming down the pike. And it's worth noting that you can change the Metro or modern UI screen to have the same background as your desktop, so that switch is a little bit less jarring for you. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to note.
Oh, so that they're just both the same?
Right. So they're both the same. So when you launch the Metro experience or the modern UI experience, you get the tiles in front of the same background that your desktop was using in the first place. So it's a, you know, like when I hit the start key on my Windows 8 installation here, I go from a big old blue desktop to a very dark, dark and gray desktop. So that is a little bit jarring. So if you want to kind of take the edge off of that, you can make them the same background.
I see. But what if you want to make them different custom backgrounds?
Yes, you can also do this.
Sweet. All right, so what else we got?
So just like we mentioned before, you can swipe up from the bottom of the screen to access the entirety of all your apps, some kind of pseudo start menu for the modern experience. So
it sounds like dashboard for OS X.
Well, so it's kind of like what the start menu used to be. You know, it's a list of all of your programs, and it can be invoked at your option by the start menu or by swiping up when you're just on the start screen.
Okay, pretty simple feature. Let's move on.
Yep. So they've changed the way that the search function works. So right now, if you use the search function, you pull in the charms or hit Start C, and you click on Search, and you can search through your apps, your settings, and your files. And they're all in kind of like three buckets. So you have to type your query and then click one of the buckets. And they're changing that around so that now it's universal search. So it'll do all of those things and the web.
That sounds much easier.
Yes. It kind of drove me crazy that you would go searching for some utility and you would have to click the settings bucket to actually get a list of utilities. So we should be able to put that one to bed. And apps are on the way. We've got news that Facebook is going to have an app on the way and Flipboard is going to have an app on the way for Windows 8 for the modern UI of Windows 8. So that's pretty encouraging. They've had a half decent app story so far. They're growing pretty rapidly, and I think that not having a Facebook app is a huge black hole, and it'll be nice to fill that black hole.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, this would be pretty much the first Facebook first-party desktop app out there.
Well, remember, it's kind of a desktop app because they straddle the line between desktop and mobile so thinly. You know, it's part of the modern experience. It's not really a Windows 8 desktop app, as it were.
Well, it took until, like, 2012 for Facebook to have an iPad app. So it's pretty surprising that they're already working on this.
Yeah, and remember, I mean, Facebook and Microsoft have been buddies recently for whatever reason. So I have to imagine that they sped that up a little bit for their buddy. So also, IE 11 is getting a feature called Reading List that's really similar to what iOS has. And you use that all the time on iOS, don't you?
Right. Reading List is an iCloud feature. So it syncs between OS X and iOS, and it's really great.
That's
the
just
coolest
Safari,
thing,
right?
Yeah. It's all built into Safari, and it syncs through iCloud. But the coolest feature is that everything in your Reading List is downloaded to an offline cache. Nice. On both your phone and your computer.
Yeah, so there will be some notion of IE 11 having something very similar to that, although probably a little bit less mature. And here is one of the kickers, and I love this. This is fantastic. They're releasing a new cooking app, and one of its features, which is the nifty demo, is that you don't have to touch the tablet to go to the next screen of the recipe. You can swipe your fingers in front of the camera, and it will switch the page for you. So if you've got flour on your hands or whatever, you don't have to dirty up your screen.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. I've seen a few web apps that it can enable that. But if it's a really good first-party recipe app, having that swipe feature would be a totally killer app for home cooks.
Yeah, I definitely think so, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some others kind of snip that idea up. And, you know, not this is the first time that this idea has been implemented, but I bet you that'll start to get a little more popular because it just makes so much sense.
Yeah, it does.
So, and off the wall, we've got built-in 3D printing support.
That's crazy. Now, is it drivers for 3D printers, or are they also going to have some sort of software that lets you print stuff?
Yeah, it's a little hazy. They showed it off at the demo, and they had, I think it was a MakerBot, I'm pretty sure, that they pulled out, you know, a 3D printer by the company MakerBot.
Which is actually, it was, while we were off the air, MakerBot was sold to another 3D printer manufacturing company.
Yeah, that's right. So they are going to put that into Windows as a first-class citizen, just like all the other 2D printers are, so you won't have to have any kind of special software to interface with it.
I remember when all 2D printer drivers were third-party software in Windows.
Yep, so this is the first step toward achieving what we have for 2D printers today for some 3D printers in the future. So that's pretty
exciting.
Well,
that's a nice idea.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little off the wall, you know. It's not it's not something I expected. I didn't expect them to whip out a MakerBot onto stage and start talking about 3D printing. But 3D printing's really cool. I'm glad to see it going into the future. You'll have to tell me how it is, being from the future.
It's great. Just wait till we can print materials other than plastic and occasionally food. Food's going to be the big one.
Yeah, I want my Earl Grey tea hot.
Don't really need to 3D print that.
Oh, no. No, not really.
So the preview sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I haven't gotten around to installing it quite yet. But I hope to get this in a virtual machine and see what's going on in there. And, I don't think I'm going to update any of my actual machines here until it's actually out and released and out of beta and all that. But I'll certainly throw it in a virtual machine just to give it a try.
Well, for our listeners who have virtual machines or are willing to take the plunge, who can get the 8.1 preview and how do they get it?
Yeah, it should be, let's see here, should be available for everyone. And I think we'll have a link in the show notes that links to the proper place. They'll have an ISO that you can use to actually go and install the bits.
Okay, great. Cool. So last time, Chris, we talked a lot about the Apple announcements at the Worldwide Developers Conference. But we also mentioned a little bit about the E3 conference that was happening at the same time. And the only thing that we had heard about that day was Microsoft's new Xbox One.
Yeah, so the One has been embroiled in some bit of controversy because they had some restrictions on how you could use the console. The idea was that the Xbox had to phone home and ping a server once every 24 hours for you to authenticate that you do indeed own the game that you were trying to play. So with that came really nice features, like you were able to install things to the hard disk and not have the disk anymore. You didn't need the disk. And then it would have to phone home to make sure that you actually own the game. And people got really upset that it had to phone home. I mean, the whole idea that if you are, let's say, deployed to Afghanistan or something and you don't have an internet connection available to you and you want to play Xbox, then you absolutely could not do so as it was. So that's upsetting enough to a lot of people, and people gave really loud feedback that was not okay to do. So,
especially after Sony chimed in later in the week when they announced the release details for the PlayStation 4, and they said, yeah, we're not going to do any of that online-only stuff.
Right.
We're doing it the same way we did it with the PS3. You have games on disc, and you can resell them if you want to.
Yeah, so what Microsoft is doing here is they're kind of doing an about-face. They're saying that using a disc will be exactly the same as it was on the Xbox 360. They're ditching this idea of the Xbox phoning home for disc-based games. So what you are losing is the ability to install it to the hard drive, like I mentioned. So if you want to play a different game, you got to get up and get the disc out and put it into the drive. There's no kind of futuristic features of you installing it to the hard drive. For now, at least. I have to imagine, come 5 years down the road or something like that, that they're going to go back to that kind of model where you don't have to shuffle these discs around at all.
Yeah, they'll have to. That's where everybody's going in the future. And I'm frankly surprised that they didn't just do a halfway solution where you could either install everything to the hard drive and run it off the hard drive and then have an internet connection, or just run things off the disk, because you wouldn't want to fill up your hard drive if you didn't have the internet connection anyway.
Yeah, well, they kind of did that. So there's this notion of online-only games. So if the distributor and maker of the game decides that their game is online-only and they're not going to distribute a disk, then all of those features apply. You can download it, install it to the hard drive, and it's going to have to phone home for authorization to play the game. But
right, but that was true of the Xbox 360 already.
Right. So it's going to be, there's some halfway in there, but not really, not like you're thinking.
Well, as a futurist, I'm always a fan of progress, even if that means disappointing some people.
Yeah, I really hope that they figure this out over time, because I think they just kind of moved too early, and they really eventually they need to figure out this discless gaming thing, and they didn't do it in this round, but I think it's back to the drawing board. I don't think it's entirely scrapped. So I'd really, because they had some really interesting things. So you could install it and then share it up with up to 10 family members, although the details around that were a little vague as to, you know, what is a family member. But I really liked what was happening there, and I somehow think that they're giving up a car to build a better horse and buggy at this point. And it's going to be an awesome horse and buggy, but it's not a car, if that makes any sense. Because what I want to see is the internal combustion engine. Can I torture the metaphor any further for you?
You could, but it might be like whipping a dead horse and buggy.
Yeah, so I'm optimistic about the future of discless gaming on the Xbox One, but I am a little disappointed that they couldn't figure it out. And I do think, however, that it was the right decision to make. You know, their customers loudly proclaimed that this was not okay, and they said, okay, we hear you, this is how it's going to be, and they reverted on that. So I think that's actually...
Yeah, they did have to definitely respond. There was a lot of outcry, and we weren't able to really touch on that because it all happened while we were gone.
Yeah. So I think they made the right decision, but in the end, I think those people that were mad are going to be really mad when everybody does this. So we'll see what the future holds.
Do you think that any of the outrage came from the fact that this is a $500 machine? I mean, you take the Android gaming device, the Ouya.
Yeah, the Ouya.
Yeah, the Ouya. And that's only $100, and nobody cares that it's online only. For $500, like, do people need to have that permanence? Do they need to have ownership of their content?
Well, yeah, I guess maybe it's not the price point, but it is the arena in which they're playing. So, in other words, you're scaling up an Android device as a connected gaming device. And, you know, you're not getting Modern Warfare. You're not getting those huge titles that you're going to get on this console. This console is more serious than that. And, you know, it's cute that Ouya can come in with a $99 Android gaming console. And that's awesome for some people. But for the people who are looking to buy a next-generation console, the Ouya is not even in the ballpark. And the Xbox and the PS4 are the competitors. And the Wii U as well, for a kind of different subset.
Right. Now, so, the PlayStation 4, we got some details about that. It's only going to be $400 when it comes out during the holiday season.
Right. So we've got the Xbox One at $499 and the PlayStation 4 at $399. So that's kind of interesting, isn't it?
And the Wii U at $299, or right. I think that they are doing a version for, I think we said this last week, was it $249? Maybe even less than that.
Yeah, I'm not terrible. I don't remember. That sounds about right, though. I'd have to go back and look. But the discrepancy in price between the PS4 and the Xbox can kind of be explained by the Kinect sensor that is included with the Xbox and not with the PS4, right?
Right, and the PlayStation 4 apparently will not be shipping with its own version of the...
Yeah, with the Move.
The sight sensor. Right, they were going to include it by default, but they decided to undercut Microsoft and not include it and come out with a cheaper platform.
So that is kind of nice. I mean, you get the choice. You get the choice as to whether or not you want this thing that is admittedly awesome, but...
But also watches your every move all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess some people are creeped out by it. I'm not terribly...
And can read your pulse and heart rate.
That's right.
And, it's sensitive and your breathing.
Yep. So it's you're getting for $499 you're getting the Kinect, and for $399 you're not getting the Move. But I kind of like it that I kind of like the PS4's option. I mean, it should be a choice, right?
Right.
So anyway, that is known as the Xbox 180 is what people are calling it, or the Xbone 180.
Right. So we've got some more Microsoft news, a few more tidbits.
Yeah, we've got a couple more, and we'll get into the afterburners in a minute here, but Microsoft briefly showed off its new Metro-style Office apps, or the modern UI style, as they like to call it. So this is the tablet version of Office, or just the Windows 8 Metro experience on a desktop version of Office. So that seems pretty interesting to me. I've been clamoring all this time for more complicated apps to really get into the App Store, and we've had a couple of them. OneNote released a Metro-style app, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of these more complicated apps get in there and see what it looks like, because I'm pretty sure that even though the experience is simpler, I'm pretty sure you can fit a lot of the functionality that most people use their computers for into that simpler UI. And I'm hoping that's actually true. And we kind of need a poster boy for a more complicated app in the simpler environment. And I think the Office apps are going to be it. Now, that said, it's not going to be this year, according to Mary Jo Foley over there at CNET. So it's not going to be out until 2014. So definitely don't hold your breath for 6 months.
Yeah, that would probably be bad for your health. Now, what this means is that we won't see Office for Windows RT until at least next year, right?
Sort of. It's
so there's Office available for Windows Phone. There's Office available for Windows 8. But there's no tablet version of Office.
You can use the desktop version of Office on Windows RT.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
So it's not a pleasant experience, but you can do it.
Uh-huh.
It comes bundled with
still
Windows
can't,
RT.
You still can't use Windows or Microsoft Office for the iPad, but they did finally announce it for the iPhone. I think we reported on this like 6 months ago. We saw leaked presentations about
Sounds
Microsoft's
about right.
roadmap for and actual screenshots and demonstrations of Office for iOS. And it is finally here as of about a week and a half ago. So you can get to your SkyDrive. You can access Word, Excel, and PowerPoint documents. You can edit them, you can view them, you can add comments, and you can share with you can share your work or your comments with anyone else who's using Office 365.
That's right. So it's tied into Office 365. So you have to have an Office 365 subscription to use this thing, which isn't true on Windows Phone. So I that's a little interesting, isn't it?
Right.
That would be anti-competitive behavior. Although they are about 97% away from having a monopoly, so I don't think it's antitrust or anything. But yeah, I can use Office on my Windows Phone right now, and I don't have Office 365. So I am glad to see it come to iOS, and I think one of the things that's kind of interesting is that you have to have this 365 subscription. But what makes it interesting is that that's kind of how they had to do it because of the way Apple sells apps and the way everybody sells apps, because they take a cut of the price. So even if they weren't going to go subscription anyway, which I think they were going to do anyway, but even if they didn't do that, they wouldn't really be able to sell it on the App Store because Apple would take a 30% cut of their major business that is Office. So that wouldn't be acceptable to them.
Apple would take a cut, but I don't understand why that is completely unacceptable. I understand why they did what they did. You know, I understand why they went with a subscription model. It makes perfect sense to me. But Apple taking a cut of the sales to Apple's own audience doesn't seem like a death blow to me.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Microsoft looks at Office as having an Office audience. They're just the Office audience that happens to be using iOS.
Sure. That didn't make any sense to me.
Well, anyway, you're not going to be able to buy the app outright. It's going to be part of Office 365. That's how it's going to be no matter what else we pontificate about.
Right.
So it's good to see, though. I'm glad to see them moving out into different platforms. I'll be excited to see Android when that comes around, and I'm excited to see iOS now. It should be everywhere.
Yeah, when they have an iPad version of this software, I think it's going to become much more popular with iOS users.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that happening.
All right, so in one other piece of top news this week, This is our the end user public service announcement. But don't worry, it's not a security breach this time. If you happen to have a Yahoo Mail account that you don't use very often, you just have it, you know, for backups, emergencies, whatever it is that you're using for. If you haven't used it in 12 months, you should log into it before July 15th. Because at that point, any inbox that hasn't been used in the last year will be deleted.
So there is some concern, maybe we can get into security a little bit here, that if you had an ID previously and you used it for your password recovery email, that if somebody got your same email and realized that that service was your password recovery email, then they could use that email to gain access to whatever that service is.
Or even if you use a different email, if you don't check your email on Yahoo, if you don't check that account, you might never know that the account's already been compromised and is sending spam every which way.
Right. So that can be a little upsetting. Now, Yahoo said that they know how to deal with that, but I'm not sure what they're going to do about that. But yeah, the Great Purge is on. So I haven't used Yahoo in a very long time. But if you have an old ID sitting out there, you might as well go log into it.
Right.
Otherwise, it will be gone. Did they give a, let's see, July 15th is the drop-dead date for that.
That's right.
Yeah, so I think this is the first of my knowledge hearing about an early internet company making a purge like this.
And they're saying the main reason they want to do it is to open up new usernames for Yahoo users.
Yeah, because I'm sure they're all taken, you know, just like all three-letter domains are taken. You know, it's a really old service, and it's the first time I've seen it. So yeah, you might be able to go in there and get some good ones if you so choose. You could go in there and get Taylor, perhaps.
I'll have to check. That would be great, although it would be different from all of my other email addresses.
Yeah, that's true. I'd probably stick with consistency.
Well, I'll try to get something one way or the other. Well, that's it for the top news. Should we turn on the afterburners?
Yeah, is your seatbelt fastened? Can we blast away with the afterburners?
My seatbelt's fastened. I'm all set to go.
Okay, I'm ready too, so get us into it.
All right, Sony has announced a new flagship, phone-tablet hybrid. It's going to be called the Xperia Z. It has a 5-inch 1080p display, as is all the rage. They're saying it's going to be waterproof, dustproof, shockproof, it's very thin. It's full featured. It's got LTE, a 13 megapixel camera, 2 gigs of RAM, Snapdragon S4 Pro. Looks like a pretty good phone. In the U.S., it will be available on T-Mobile sometime this summer.
Sounds pretty tasty.
Now, Samsung has launched all sorts of stuff over the last few weeks, as they always seem to do.
It's the spaghetti strategy.
Yeah, they've been focusing on cameras and tablets this month. First is a new version of the Galaxy S4 that basically has a full point-and-shoot camera built into it. So it's got instead of their regular phone camera, it's a 16-megapixel camera with a 10x optical zoom lens. So from the back, this thing looks like a straight-up point-and-shoot. From the front, it looks like a Galaxy S4.
There has to be a mullet joke in there somewhere.
Well, the real mullet phone is going to be their new replaceable lens camera, the Galaxy NX. Now, this is going to be running a full Android touchscreen on the back, but this is not a point-and-shoot. This looks like I don't know if it actually is a digital SLR camera, but it has a 20.3 megapixel pro quality APS-C sensor with hybrid autofocus, with adjustable shutter speeds and f-stops.
Yeah, it doesn't say in the article here, but it looks like a Micro Four Thirds camera or something like that. So yeah, you're right. This is a pro camera that happens.
Yeah, it
to be
may be,
Android.
But I don't know that Samsung universally supports Micro Four Thirds with
their
pro cameras. But either way, it is a full size pro camera that runs the latest version of Android on a full 5-inch screen on the back. So it's pretty cool if that is what you're looking for.
Yeah, I love that idea.
Right. Now, moving on to tablets, they are launching three different versions of the Galaxy Tab 3, pretty much all the versions that they already had for the Galaxy Tab 2, some of which were only released a month or two ago. So there's a 7-inch Galaxy Tab 3, an 8-inch, and a 10-inch. And so those are only going to be $200, $300, and $400. Finally, if that wasn't enough, they are launching a new 8-inch tablet. This is going to be a Windows 8 plus Android dual boot tablet in either 10.1 inches or 13.3 inches.
That seems pretty cool. So the this really is the spaghetti strategy. Throw everything against the wall, see what sticks.
Right. Now, the bigger one, the 8-inch Q, is going to have a full Haswell Core i5 CPU in there. And a 128-gigabyte solid-state drive, not to mention a 3,200 by 1,800 pixel display.
Wowzer. And when they were talking at Build that Windows 8.1 is newly optimized for these larger screens. They're not quite there yet, but they've done some work to make that experience better.
Right. So this is a pretty wild tablet, worth mentioning. That's all the Samsung product announcements we have for this week. One more thing we got out of E3 a few weeks ago was a new product from Comcast. They are launching a new flagship Xfinity DVR Media Center box. This is going to have voice control. It's going to have DVR in the cloud. It's going to have automatic scheduling, a whole bunch of crazy features. We have a short video in the show notes if you're interested. It's called the X2. I'm sure it's going to be overpriced.
Yeah, at least until it matures for a little while. Those cable boxes are always kind of expensive at first because they last so long. Or at least they last in the market so long.
Well, with Comcast, you're not going to be paying for the box. You're going to be paying a rental fee.
Right.
So no matter how long it lasts, you're going to be paying more.
Right. All right, and Instagram is adding video to their collection of things. You'll be able to upload 15-second clips with sound to the new Instagram video service, and people on Vine are very angry about it for some reason.
Yeah, well, because Instagram is clearly just copying the concept of Vine. It's a little bit interesting because you have still square pictures and then square videos all on the same feed if you open up Instagram. I've noticed a lot of third-party services are still unable to interpret the video. They just post them as still images. But instead of 6 seconds, you get 15 seconds. And instead of all videos or all pictures, you get both in the same place. So if you liked Instagram already, you'll probably think that this is fine. And if you use Vine already, then you've probably already seen all the hate mail.
That's right, because people have been posting Vines specifically about this.
Right. Now, in our last Afterburner this week, Apple TV got an update last week that added native HBO Go support and ESPN Live, along with a few other subscription and free services like Crunchyroll and Qello concert streaming. Those are both paid subscriptions, and Sky News, the UK news network,
cool.
Now has a channel that is completely free. HBO Go and ESPN, if you have those as part of your cable package, then they're free, but you can't get them otherwise.
Yeah, any other services you can add to a box like this just enhances the experience a lot. So
right.
The app picture is really coming together. That's nice to see.
Yeah, the ESPN app is really great. They have a lot of live events. They have clips, they have highlights, they have full games in archive, and then HBO Go, as with every other platform, they have available just about everything that they've ever produced.
Cool. Well, I'll be looking forward to it. These little Roku and Apple TV boxes get more and more interesting over time, so definitely looking forward to it. All right, let's
off the afterburners.
Let's turn off the afterburners. Let's take it easy. You can undo your seatbelt and grab a gin and tonic, Mr. Marr, because let's get into the end user stories.
All right. You've got the first story this week. This one comes directly from you.
Yes, this is me. Pandora, I forget how long ago that was, just maybe a week ago or maybe two, announced that they were going to have a 10-foot UI experience on the Xbox 360. And they announced that it was an HTML5 app that you can access through the Xbox 360's browser. So I thought, well, that's exciting. I'm going to be able to use this on my home theater PC, on my media center. That's terribly exciting. I'll be able to use a proper remote interface with Pandora through my TV. That's fantastic news. And then I went to actually go and use it, and you go to tv.pandora.com, and what they do is they serve you an ad for how awesome the Xbox 360 app is.
I know it's awesome. That's why I went to the website.
Give me the 10-foot interface. Come on. So I found that a little confusing, but it turns out I figured out a way to get Pandora to accept your browser as an Xbox, as it were. And all you have to do is pass it some parameters, and with this special link, you are able to actually use the 10-foot interface. So I'm using 10-foot Pandora on my media center, and I couldn't be happier about it. And I know this isn't supported. You know, this isn't something that Pandora is going to support you with, because this is a workaround. You know, this is just something that happens to work. So if there's bugs or anything like that, it's really not their prerogative to fix them quite yet until they roll this stuff out. But for the moment, I haven't seen any bugs, and it's been working well for me. So I'm going to add this to my Media Center utility relaunch, which we must have talked about on the show before, even though we're not focused on Media Center. And I'm pretty excited about it. Pandora on my TV. It's cool stuff.
Yeah. Sounds very cool. Good job, Chris. It's an awesome, awesome hack.
Yeah, so we've got a link into the show notes to the Digital Media Zone, obviously, and I've got the link there for you to try out. If you're a home theater kind of person, you know, using XBMC or Media Center, then go give it a try. It's nice.
Or if you just want to, you know, control Pandora without having to go walk up to your computer.
Yeah, I guess you could put a remote on your computer and, you know, fire the remote across the room at it. That would be kind of cool, too.
Well, most smartphones can become remotes now, if you want.
Yeah, I suppose that's true as well.
All right.
All right, well, let's get into our green tech story of the week. What do you have for us?
All right. Well, a few days ago, President Barack Obama gave a speech at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., laying out an impassioned plea for stronger reductions of carbon pollution, and he gave a climate action plan outline which encourages Congress and business and the country and the whole world, really, to be more proactive at reducing the effects of climate change. I am not going to give you the highlights or the whole speech. If you're interested, you definitely should check out the whole speech. It's one of his better speeches of late. But in that spirit, I am going to give you another article about how, even if you were thinking about installing clean energy in your own home, there might be a better way to look at it. Now, the way that most of us think about renewable energy, especially installing it in residential areas, is you compare it to what electricity costs on the grid. Right. And you're always going to pay a little bit more. But then sometimes there are some tax incentives which can reduce that. And eventually, long term, if you're not paying for grid energy, you know, you make that money back. But the question is, how quickly will you make it back? But
basically, we don't have the infrastructure for a lot of these new green energies that we have for coal and the like. So they tend to be a little bit more expensive up front. But a lot of times there's subsidies. Right. Is that right?
Right. Well, they're more expensive up front because you have to actually buy the equipment yourself and install it, and you're not getting the same economies of scale that a large industrial power plant will get. You don't have to pay for the installation of the power plant. You only pay for the power generated. But in light of President Obama's impassioned plea to get us to think more proactively about reducing the effects of climate change. I am sharing with us a new study that does the math a little bit differently on how you can install solar or wind or geothermal at home. Now, the traditional way, let's take a solar panel, right? If you live in Southern California or the Arizona desert, solar panels on your house are pretty much a no-brainer. You get a lot of sun, and it's going to reduce your bill fairly effectively, right? There are a lot of things that you can do with it. It's going to pay off fairly quickly. But it turns out if you're in California installing a solar panel, it's going to have less of a positive effect on the environment than if you were in, say, Ohio or West Virginia installing right. that same solar panel. The panel itself would be less effective and would take longer to pay back, but it will offset about six times as much carbon emissions because you would otherwise get that power from coal power if you lived in an area that has a larger production of coal. California's energy production already comes largely from solar, geothermal, and natural gas generators. So if you can install, you know, just even a little solar panel or a little wind turbine, or maybe heat your house with geothermal or just a solar hot water heater, which is one of the most cost-effective green energy upgrades that you can make to a home. You are doing so much more good for the planet than anybody who does the same thing in California. And wouldn't that make you feel better? It would make me feel better. So I was just sharing this new math that has been released by researchers from Carnegie Mellon University.
So not only would you be able to make yourself feel better, it'll make you and Taylor feel better.
And the Earth, Chris. And the Earth. And President Obama. And tree huggers everywhere.
Tree huggers everywhere. All right, well, let's move into our tip of the week. And it's not really a tip of the week. We've got a tip discussion of the week of some sort. And
the tip of the week is that Google Reader will be gone within the week. So if you use Google Reader, or if you had been thinking about Google Reader, you have to find a new alternative. And now we are going to discuss those alternatives.
All right, so they're shutting off on Monday. That is July 1st. So if you don't do one of these things by then, you are going to be out in the cold. So be a little careful with that.
Right. So now the first thing that you need to do is go to a Google page called the Google Takeout Reader, which will create a zip file archive of your reader history.
So that'll have all of your shares and stuff like that? What is that going to export for you?
I don't think it'll have your shares because the shares aren't really native anymore. Not since they got rid of those social features in lieu of Google Plus. So all of your shares, if you were using native shares, will be saved on your Google Plus account. But all of your history, all of your feeds, all of your starred items, all the folders that you make of your RSS feeds, and the people that you follow will all be wrapped up into this archive.
Yeah, that's nice. See, now, the reason I ask is because I use it a little bit differently. I just kind of, the only thing that matters to me is the feeds. That's really the only thing.
Well, those will be contained in a separate file inside the archive.
Yep. So that's pretty cool that they're letting you get out at least. So let's get into, we've got a few of these things that we're going to talk about. And the first one, and I think the most talked about one that I've seen out there on the web is Feedly. They're actually integrating with Google's login, and they let you import all of your reader feeds.
Right. Feedly got their hands on a relatively recent source code of Google Reader, and they're integrating the API so that everything is supposed to be a seamless transition. So not only will they be able to export all of your feeds for you and turn your Google Reader into Feedly automatically without going through that archive step, they're also going to integrate with a lot of the more popular third-party apps that people had been using for Google Reader.
Yeah, exactly right. So the one that I've been using on Windows Phone and Windows 8, Next-Gen Feed Reader, which is fantastic, by the way. Definitely check it out if you're on those platforms. They are going to integrate with Feedly. That's the one they've chosen. And it'll be kind of nice. It'll be seamless because they're taking the API from Google Reader and just cloning it and figuring it out on the back end. So that's kind of nice. So now these other ones I don't have a whole lot of experience with. What else do we have here?
Well, some of them are new. I think one of the reasons that Feedly is so popular right now is that they sort of had a head start on everyone else.
Yeah.
They were already working on something similar, and as soon as Google announced that they were closing Reader, Feedly says, okay, we're ready to go. Everyone come here. Now, in the meantime, AOL announced that they were going to launch their own Reader. Dig has just launched their own Reader today, the 26th, and it's rolling out slowly through invites. I'm anxious to try Dig to see what they've come up with, but I haven't been invited yet.
Yeah, at least from looking at the screenshots, they seem a little more basic. I think you're right in that the guys at Feedly got a bit of a head start on it, because all these other ones seem really, really basic. And
right.
I'm sure they'll get better over time. It's not to say that they're bad or anything, but they don't seem to have all of the features in line quite yet. But I think you're right. Dig is the one to watch. I think that's the wild card, because I know they have really talented engineers, and I know that they can produce something special. So I'd say use Feedly for now, but keep your eye on Dig. And the other ones I'm not sure about.
All right, well, I'm going to go through a couple of them quickly, starting with the browser-based options. So Feedly is a browser-based option that you used to need a Chrome extension, but now they are extension-free, web-only. They're also available for iOS and Android. Now, there is another one called the Old Reader, and they're called that because they're based on that Google Reader that I was talking about that used to let you share things to other people that use the Reader so that they can have feeds of items within the same context that you shared with them. And then they can see stuff that, or you can see stuff that they shared with you. This is how Reader used to work before they switched it over to the Google Plus interface, which doesn't work the same because it's out of context. Instead of getting an RSS feed item in your list that was shared from someone else, the only way it works with Google Plus is you just see a link on Google Plus. So the old Reader has been around for a while, actually, doing what Google Reader used to do. Now, if you really liked that feature, but it wasn't enough for you to move away from Google Reader when they got rid of it, well, now they're getting rid of Google Reader, you can go back to that. You can check out the old Reader, which is web only.
Cool. So if you're really missing the social features, that's where you want to go. Makes sense.
Right. Now, Dig is going to be web, and they also have an Android app ready already. And I think their iOS app, their new iOS app, launched today as well. And they are doing social integration entirely through Dig. And they're going to have a popular filter, which lets you just see what's popular. So there are some elements of the original Dig website that are folded in here, but it's definitely very much a Google Reader-style interface.
Yeah, and that's the one I'm looking forward to. Once their software engineers really dig their teeth into it, we may have something special there.
All right. So the last web-only traditional-style reader that I'm going to mention is News Vibe. This is simple. It's clean. There's no social integration, no app integration. It's web-only. It's going to work well. It's free. And there's no ads. There's no clutter. It's simple. News Vibe. All right. Now, because this is a tech podcast, I'm going to get really techie here. If you are tired of relying on third parties for your RSS aggregation, you can make your own Google Reader, and it's called Tiny Tiny RSS. You have to run your own server, but then at that point you will get your entire Google Reader ecosystem run off your own web server or hosting service. And so you'll be able to access it through the web, presumably from your own server, or they also have an Android app that would then connect to your server.
Neat. So your own server would act as the central location for that.
Right.
It doesn't, I mean, you'd probably be accepting more downtime that way, but at least it would be under your control. I could see installing this kind of thing on my home server. That would be kind of cool.
Right. Now, if you're a fan of apps, I could keep going here, but you know, if you're using something like Reader with three E's, or NetNewsWire, or FeedDemon, or Pulse, then you should check with them to see what you have to do to stick with that service, because all of them are going to have options.
Yeah, all of them are going to have options, and a lot of them don't need a feed aggregation service. In fact, I know you can use FeedDemon and NetNewsWire and just import your own RSS without needing a back-end service from Google or Feedly. So
right, and some people do use it that way, but currently a lot of people are using Google Reader as the back-end for their app.
Right.
And if that's what you're doing, you shouldn't just expect it to seamlessly transition. You should make sure that you have everything you need before July 1st when Google Reader goes away.
Right.
And if you don't use Google Reader, then this is an excellent opportunity to check out something that can really simplify your news reading, if that's something that you're looking for.
Yeah, it's definitely, I know we use it quite differently, you and me, but it's definitely a good thing to have. No matter how you use it, it's downright essential for, at least for us on the podcast, if nothing else, is to aggregate all of the articles we've read over the week and put them together for the show notes and that kind of thing. So, but
there's one more web app I wanted to mention. This one is pretty new. It's new to me anyway. It's called Flow Reader. So this is for the real social media fiends. It's a full RSS reader that can do the same type of aggregation that Google Reader was doing, but they will also integrate your Google+, your Twitter, and your Facebook updates, so you can get customized updates from your Facebook friends, like your Facebook news feed inside Flow Reader,
along with
Twitter, along with your RSS feed. So basically, if you were checking all of those accounts every day, this is a place where you can put them all in one page.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's a new spin. That's beyond just being a reading app. That's cool.
Right. Yeah. This is full RSS aggregation.
Neat. Yeah.
It's next generation.
Well, like I was saying, at least for me, and particularly for the podcast purpose, these kinds of apps are indispensable. And I know a ton of people, whether you're podcasting or not, are using these services. So I'm glad we got to do that overview.
Yeah, me too.
Sad Google Reader's going away. I don't want it to go away.
I'm not even sure what I'm going to do yet.
Yeah, I still have to figure out what I'm going to do. I signed into Feedly with my Google account and got my feeds over there, but I haven't switched around all my apps to look at Feedly instead of Google Reader. So I've got a little work to do, too.
It's going to be very interesting for me putting the show together next week.
Yeah, I suppose it will. All right, well, let's get into our app pick of the week. I think we've got a good one. What do we got here?
All right, so this is a new mail client for Windows and Mac from Opera. They are releasing this new inbox system where you can have multiple tabs of inboxes. I haven't tried Opera Mail yet, but it's free and it's cross-platform. If you were looking for a different type of mail client, this might be the thing for you. I mean, even if you don't use Opera, or if you've never used Opera, if you've been unsatisfied with your mail clients, which I think a lot of people are, and you can still use Gmail, of course, but it has its own organizational system, and I don't know, you might like it.
Yeah, I still have not used... Now, I need to give Opera Mail a try before I say this, I suppose, but I still have not used a mail client that is satisfactory. I have not seen one at all. So I'm going to give this a try and see what's going on in there. because I found the Mail app on Mac to be unsatisfactory. Windows Live Mail was probably the best thing you could do for Windows, and that wasn't too great. Outlook ain't too great. Evolution on Ubuntu, not too great. Thunderbird, not too great. So I'm glad that at least somebody is even thinking about, you know, reinventing some of this.
Because all right, this app pick was all for Chris.
Yeah, I'm extremely dissatisfied with the state of mail apps right now. So I'm going to try this. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, cool.
Maybe I can get into it next week. I'll set it up by the time we podcast next week.
Okay, so our app pick of the week was from Opera. Our kicker this week is from Mars.
From Mars, yes. And you to do this thing full justice, you really have to go to the link.
Yes, you have to check out this 1.3 billion pixel panorama that NASA and GigaPan have stitched together from the Mars Curiosity rover's cameras. It's three different cameras. It's a very large panorama. They have many different versions. You can make it full screen and you can scroll around using the GigaPan scrolling. You can download different desktop size apps. I was a little disappointed that I couldn't download an iPad-sized picture, but I'm sure that's coming eventually, or I'll just put it together myself.
Yeah, it's almost alarming. I'm looking at it right now, and you can like zoom in on a rock and like see, you know, the sand. It's really kind of incredible.
Yeah, you can see the tire tracks that the Curiosity rover was moving around in. You can see some of the experiments that it did on its way. It's very cool. It's very impressive. It's a little jarring at first because NASA doesn't use color cameras, so it's a strange false color composite, and
right,
the colors change just kind of randomly throughout the picture. But it is still extremely cool. It's extremely zoomable, and it's Mars.
Yeah, I would love to see the stage that they filmed this on.
Yeah, it's no problem. You go to Mars.
Now, I was thinking more of like Curiosity rover deniers.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I'd love to go to Mars. Maybe one day. Probably not.
Probably not. Well, that's all I have for the show this week.
Cool. So, follow through. We've got a link to the actual picture. You got to check it out. It's cool. Cool stuff. Science for the win. So that'll do it for this week. Taylor, if somebody were to try to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing so?
Well, you could make an angry Vine video about Instagram and then address it to me.
No, I'm going to make an angry Instagram video about Vine and send it to you.
I won't get it.
It's okay. Maybe how about Twitter? How about that?
Well, Twitter's the same as my Vine handle. So I guess if you really wanted to, you could just try at TaylorPhone.
Cool. And I'm also on Twitter. If you want to get at us, at me, I am at Chris Hale Barnes. And we are part of the DigitalMediaZone.com, who is at DigiMediaZone. So if you want to follow any of us, feel free. We're out there. We're talking. Yeah, join the conversation. So I think that'll do it for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes with the 1.3 billion pixels of Mars at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You can have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, the movie podcast, and the latest episode of Home On, which is Richard Gunther's new home automation podcast. I've listened to the first two. It's a great podcast. You should give that one a try for sure. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can either leave a comment on the posts or send us an email at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can tweet us at @theenduser. So join us live in the chat room as we record the show every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm hoping we'll be back next Monday more regularly.
Barring any Rolling Stones concerts.
That's right. So I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week.
Bye-bye.